I'm going to take a look at a piece of land. It's a farm, and we're going to get the history of that land today, or a little bit of it anyway, as we visit with Jerry Apps. Jerry's a Madison historian, writer, professor emeritus at the UW-Madison, a friend of mine. He's the author of more than 40 books, including Old Farm, A History. It's published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. He's received lots of awards. He's received the Council of Wisconsin Writers 2007 Major Achievement Award, the Wisconsin Library Association's 2007 Notable Wisconsin Writer Award. He's got other books that he's been on, for many of them, to talk with us about them. In a Pickle, published by UW Press. The Travels of Increase Joseph, Badger Books published that. The People Come First from Co-op Extension. When Chores Were Done, Boyhood Stories, published by Amherst Press. So he's written a lot. And I'm here to tell him today that I think this is his best work.
Uh-oh.
I tell you what, I really enjoyed this book, Jerry.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I worked hard on it. It took me 3 years to do the background research for it.
Oh, man. Well, I tell you what, if you want to join in as we visit with Jerry, I hope you will. And maybe you've got some remembrances of a special place. Maybe it's a special farm where you grew up, or where you have spent a good share of your life, or just some questions for Jerry about writing. We'll be pleased to answer any of those. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And I want to mention, we'll mention this again, Jerry will be appearing with Justin Isherwood, in a panel discussion.
That's right, and Jim Pope. On tomorrow, Thursday night at 7 o'clock at the Overture Center. And that's part of the Wisconsin Book Festival.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, really. And then I'm there again at the Overture Center on Sunday afternoon at 12, from 12 to 1:30, doing a solo on this book, Old Farm.
Oh, well, I tell you what, I love this book. I'm going to have you talk about it. Why did you write it, and what it's about? Tell us.
Well, it's there are a number of reasons why I wrote it. Perhaps the biggest reason is, as someone who's interested in the preservation of old rural buildings, the preservation of stories and history, I put all of that together, and I thought, why not look at my own farm that my family and I have owned now for more than 40 years? And I wanted to use the book as an example of how other people can do what I call the genealogy of their land.
Yeah.
I started way back. Those folks who read James Michener's work remember that he often went back and talked about the glacier for 200 pages. Well, I talk about the glacier, but not for 200 pages, because the glacier is the beginning place in the upper Midwest, especially as to the kind of agriculture that we have, the terrain, the building materials, the rivers and the lakes, and all of the rest. So that's where I start, and I have a map showing the last glacier that touched our place, which was 10,000 years ago, and when it receded, it left what we have now, which are hills and stones and sand. Our farm is not the greatest from a typical agricultural perspective. And we're right on the terminal moraine, which in itself is absolutely fascinating, because that means where the last glacier stopped. And just to the west of us, a mile and a half, is Old Glacial Lake, Wisconsin. And can you imagine, at one time, that was all underwater, that whole area, which is now the irrigated area just south of Plover, around Coloma, in that area. So I talk about the terminal moraine, the last glacier, and then I talk about the biological tension zone. As an old professor of agriculture, I've always been interested in this sort of thing. And the biological tension zone happens to be a band about, 20 to 30 miles wide that stretches from western Wisconsin to north of Port Washington. And within that biological tension zone, and why it's called a tension zone, is where the southern and northern animal and plant species overlap. Yeah. We have bur oak on our farm, which is a southern plant species. Mm-hmm. We also have white pine, native white pine, on our farm, which is a northern plant species. So that's the beginning of the work. That's the foundation for the book. And then from there, I get into Native American history. We mm-hmm. happen to be a part of the Menominee Territory, where the Menominee Indians reigned for thousands of years. And I have information on the Indian Treaty, which led to all of the area of which my farm is a part becoming federal land. And that happened in 1848, late, mm-hmm. because that's the year that Wisconsin became a state, as most people know. And the Menominees owned all of the land from west of Lake Poygan to east of the Wisconsin River and north of the Fox. That whole area was Menominee country. And by the way, all of that information, if you do a little digging, is most of it is on the internet. You just have to dig it out. And so then I got into the Indian treaties and how they were negotiated, and how Chief Oshkosh, who's the city named after this chap, who was a very important figure in Native American history. Chief Oshkosh did not agree to the 1848 treaty. He said to the federal government, I'm sure through his translator, that we are not going to accept the provisions of this treaty. And why? Well, what they wanted to do, what the federal government wanted to do, was to send the Menominees to Minnesota and put them on a reservation. And and Chief Oshkosh said, let me see that land before I sign my name, my X or whatever he signed. And so he, Chief Oshkosh, and a couple, three of his sub-chiefs traveled out to Minnesota. They looked at this land and discovered that it was adjacent to the Sioux Indian Reservation. Now, the Menominees and the Sioux had been arch enemies for generations. And Oshkosh came back and said, I'm not going to sign it. And there was a great impasse. And further, Chief Oshkosh, bless him, what he did was, I'm going to talk to your big chief, meaning I'm going to talk to the President of the United States. And he traipsed off to Washington, D.C., and he met with our favorite president that everyone remembers fondly, Millard Fillmore. Most people have long forgot about Millard Fillmore. But Millard Fillmore, when he listened to Chief Oshkosh's plea, he said, you know, and I'm really paraphrasing, you've got a point. I think you've been had. And they renegotiated the treaty, and that established the Menominee, now Menominee County, then the Menominee Reservation. So that's an interesting part of the history of this land that I own, because the Menominees walked across it for years.
Well, and the land itself, you spend a good portion of the book is talking about, well, first your dad buys this farm, and the neighbors all wonder why the devil.
He bought it in 1964, and he bought it for back taxes. The family that had lived there, and I've got the story of them in this book. They, if you wanted to study in history, just reflect on the family that owned our farm. They never had electricity. They never farmed with anything other than horses. They drove a team to town with a buggy. And I remember that when I was in high school. I mean, they were unusual to the people who were farming with tractors and all of the rest of it. Well, when this land came up for sale, my dad discovered that someone had told him that they had not paid the taxes for a number of years. And if he would pay the taxes, they could have this 100 acres. And so in 1966, he sold the farm to my two brothers and me for $1. So I paid 33 and a third cents for my farm. And I bought out one of my brothers several years later. And I've got to fess up that I was required to pay more than 33 and a third cents for his 33 acres.
Oh, that's a great story. Well, the stories you tell about the farm and about the land and about your experiences with it are wonderful. And I want to give Nancy and Grafton a chance just to join in here for a few minutes. Nancy, thanks for waiting. Hi to you.
Hello. I grew up in Marathon County in the town of Cleveland on a 160-acre farm. And I asked my dad one time, I said, Daddy, what are those big round brown rings on the wooden floor in our bedroom? Oh, he said, that's where I made my moonshine. He said, back in the Depression days, it was so tough. They had no money, and the buildings were in the middle of 160 acres, and they were down, there was a hill coming off the driveway. It was a long driveway in the middle of 160 acres were the buildings. Well, nobody could see what was going on down there in that hill, and my dad wasn't married, and he made moonshine. Well, as time went by, he couldn't pay the mortgage, sort of like today now. And he said, well, just what he said, take the damn place. He said, I don't want it. They said, no, no, Frank, you stay on that farm, and you just farm it. Well, then he got married, and then Roosevelt came with the Federal Land Bank. And they cut the mortgages of the farmers, and in Halloween, it was Halloween in 42, my dad went to Wausau, and he paid off his farm, and he brought my mother and my little brother, Glenn, home from the hospital shortly after, I think it was early November. He brought them home from the hospital. His farm was free and clear. My brother bought the farm from my father after a while. My dad got too old, and now my brother saved 3 acres down at the end of the road on the farm, and he built a new house, and a young couple is farming that farm now, and as of February, this young couple is going to be an organic farm, and I am so proud of that 160 acres that I was raised on.
And you need to write that story down. Because that is a wonderful,
it's a great story.
Every piece of land, every piece of land has a story to tell. It's just a matter of doing a little digging, a little investigation, a little searching, and lo and behold, these tidbits turn up. And the idea of moonshine making, that's not unique. That happened all over this great state of Wisconsin. We were so close to Chicago and Al Capone that we were a producer of some of Al Capone's supply. And I've researched that just enough to know that a number of farmers were doing it. My dad didn't, as far as I know, but our neighbors did when I was a kid. And I have lots of stories similar to yours.
You've got to write that story down, Nancy, if you haven't written it down already. And I want to get into that a little bit more with our guest today, Jerry Apson. Certainly, we'll be talking with Leanne and all of the other callers who have questions for you. But we'll be taking a quick break here and back with Jerry Apson in just a few minutes on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Jerry Apps, Madison historian, writer, and professor emeritus about his latest book. It's called Old Farm, A History. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. I've read it. I think it's his best work. He's a really good writer, and this, I think, is his best work. And you may well agree with me. And we'll talk some more with him and, of course, answer your questions at 800-642-1234. Give us a call if you have some questions or some comments as we move along. And Jerry, before we go any further, I really have to say that not only is the writing wonderful, but the photography in your book is just outstanding.
Yeah, the photos are the result of my son Steve Apps' work. Steve is a staff photographer with the Wisconsin State Journal here in Madison. And he's their Green Bay Packer photographer, so he travels all over the country during the football season. And so people would find it, I think, a bit strange that in one moment he's taking pictures of football players flying around the field, and the next moment he's taking a picture of Carner blue butterflies flitting among the lupins at our farm. And when I say that to Steve, I say, what do you think about that? He says, you know, those Carner blue butterflies don't try to run over me. No, he's very proud of this book, as he should, because he worked very hard to capture the images that are in this book. The same with writing. People look at a book like this and they say, well, you guys crank that out in a weekend. Well, from the photographer's perspective, it takes many, many hours. I don't know how many hundreds of photos he took to get the 100 that we have in this book, just as I'm not going to fess up to how many thousands of words I wrote that you don't see here either.
Well, Leanne in Heartland's been patiently waiting, so let's go to Leanne next. Leanne, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. My brother is a writer, and he lives in Madison, and I was visiting him last week, and he was raving about this book. I think he knows your son, and I'm just so excited to hear you on the radio because that's my thing, that I'm going to get your book and read it and compare what I think about it with my brother, but... He's a good writer, too, so I always take his advice.
Well, thank you very much. I think you'll enjoy it. It's written for a whole variety of people. At one level, it's for those who like pretty pictures, and they can page through it and put it down, and that's it. And they'll get a lot out of it. At several other levels, it's probably my most environmental book. I have all kinds of information about what I think about how people should relate to the land, should take care of it, should think about the future of farming, the future of the land, and how those of us who are here now are just here visiting because others will follow, and we need to pay attention to that. And I talk about this a lot in this book.
Well, we live in the country, and I have a lot of gardens, and I'm a master gardener, and being conservation-minded is very important. So I'm looking forward to
like
your
it.
Book.
You'll like the garden part. we've been gardening at our farm for 40-plus years. And we started out with 2 acres. Can you believe that? 2 acres of garden. And I grew zucchini before I knew what to do with zucchini. If you could have sold zucchini to the paper mills, I had stacks of zucchini that compared to the stacks of pulpwood that I had when I did a cutting a couple of years ago. I mean, I had some of the biggest, most luxuriant zucchini you could find anywhere. And today, I don't mind talking about that. At the time, it was a major embarrassment.
Thanks, Leanne. Thank you so much for calling. The chapter on the gardening is wonderful. Kim in Kewaskum, it's your turn. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Jerry, sorry I missed your presentation at the Kewaskum Public Library last night.
Well, I missed you, too.
I live on an old farm that was built prior to 1848, I believe that it might have been a missionary home back when the first New England Indians came to this part of the country back in the 1820s or 30s. Mm-hmm. The road went through there. It's on the original surveyor's plat, or the notes. And I'm hoping that you might be able to steer me in the right direction how a person could find the federal land bounty grants, or even, you know, before the land patents, there were different reasons that people were awarded land by the federal government or the
yeah. I found a lot of that on the internet, and I just keep digging and digging. For my land, it was in some ways a little bit easier because it didn't go on to the federal rolls until after 1848. And I have the original survey notes, and I have the Indian trails so indicated. And then I dug into the land patent records. I dug into the homestead records. As it turned out, my farm sat vacant as federal land until 1867. Unbelievable. But really not, because it was such a poor farm that nobody much wanted it. And so this poor old Joe, his name was Tom, Tom Stewart, a Civil War veteran, he came out and after he got out of the war and homesteaded the place. So I then got into the National Archives, and if there's any veteran from any war associated with your land, a good place to go is the National Archives in Washington. They have tremendous records. I got a pile of material on my Civil War veteran, Tom Stewart. It probably was an inch and a half tall. I was just unbelievably impressed with how much information I learned from the National Archives. I'm not helping you very much. What I'm doing and what I would suggest you do is to put on your detective hat and just keep looking, and things will turn up.
And, you know, just sort of along with this, I know on, I think it's November 1st, you're going to be talking at the Historical Society, are you not?
Yes, that's right. On November 1st, this coming November 1st, from 10 to 2, 10 o'clock in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, I will be at the Wisconsin Historical Society Museum on the square here in Madison. And my topic, which is what this book is all about, my topic will be how to do the genealogy of your land. And there I'll talk about everything from how to determine what the geologic record would be on up to how you find the lists of present or previous owners on up to the present time, including land patent information, all of that. So that's, again, on November 1st from 10 to 2 at the Historical Society Museum. And for those interested in more information about that, simply go to the Wisconsin Historical Society's webpage, and there you will find information about how to sign up for this workshop.
Yeah, that's great advice. And Kim, I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And while we're at it, as we mentioned earlier, that on Thursday, tomorrow, you'll be at the Overture Center in Madison. I think the topic was Half Century of Change in Rural Wisconsin.
That's right, at 7 o'clock.
And then Sunday, back again to the Overture.
From 12 to 1:30 on Sunday, which is the 19th. And the title that they've given me for that session, and it's solely on my old farm book, is For the Love of a Farm. I thought that was a neat title. And then, Larry, I'll just quickly run down
this list.
On Tuesday, then October 21st, at 6:30, I'm at the Prairie du Sac Public Library. That's Tuesday, October 21st at 6:30, Prairie du Sac Public Library. On Thursday, October 23rd, I'm at Conkey's Bookstore in Appleton from 6 to 8. And the biggie, and all of these are biggies, but this is a really biggie, on Saturday, October 25th at 1 o'clock, I will be doing my mid-Wisconsin launch of Old Farm at Patterson Memorial Library at Wild Rose, which is my hometown, and that's only 4.5 miles from where this story takes place. So mark your calendars, Saturday, October 25th, 1 p.m., Patterson Memorial Library. And then Monday, October 27th, 7 o'clock, at Schwartz's Bookstore in Mequon. And on the 28th of October at 1:30, Tuesday, October 28th at 1:30 at the Brillian Public Library. And then I will collapse.
All right. Dave and Augusta, we'll go to you next. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Jerry, I'd like to thank you for the books that you've written. I first picked up Barns of Wisconsin. I fell in love with it. And then I got your next book, I believe. It was called When Chores Were Done.
That's probably right. I don't have the order straight in my head.
And I just found it delightful. Because of you, I quit my job in Madison, and I moved up to Augusta.
Ouch.
And I bought an old farm, 1857. And on weekends, you can find me up in the haymow reading When Chores Are Done. And I want to thank you.
Well, you can't
so
beat
much.
That. Well, you know, today's the kind of a day to set up in the haymow because the rain is here in southern Wisconsin. The rain would be drumming on the roof, and there's nothing more pleasant than the smell of curing hay and the sound of raindrops drumming on the barn roof. I have
You're exactly right. I grew up in the city. I grew up in Madison, and I don't regret this at all. And the smell of a fresh bale of hay, there's nothing better, really.
Yeah, you got it right. Thanks, Dave. You have to get a copy of this book then, too.
I will. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Well, that's a nice thing to hear.
Sure.
Yeah, wonderful. Bernie in Manitowoc, your turn. Hi, Bernie.
Hi. I got to meet you when you were giving a talk at a barn preservation seminar at Kewaunee a few years ago.
Yes, I've done a bunch of those.
And we had just purchased a place in the western part of Manitowoc County, and it's real interesting that you'd come out with this book. We bought all the books that you had available at the time, and you autographed them, and thank you for that. I'm a big fan. I especially like the Barns of Wisconsin book. We've since found out that the place that we purchased has quite a bit of history. It apparently, as it turns out, is referenced as site number two for the some of the artifacts in the Schutte collection for stored at the Manitowoc Historical Society, which includes at least one Paleolithic spear point.
Really?
So there was quite obviously a settlement on the site. We find arrowheads and found a flint nap, and the previous owner showed me an axe head that he found.
Have you gotten into which Native Americans were the producers of that material? Have you gotten that far?
I have some material that it seems to span quite a bit of time, because sure, there's quite a few different style points, from rather elongated ones to more of a modern arrowhead point. Triangular. Mm-hmm. I've read things about woodland tradition and the archaic tradition. So some of it that we found apparently goes back as much as 4,000 years.
Yeah, that is so interesting, because on my farm, I have a story in this book told to me by a woman in her 80s, when I was probably 14, 15, when she was telling me these stories. The Menominee Indians camped at our farm. We have a pond on our farm, about 5 acres. And she told me stories about how the Menominees would camp at this pond on their way from Adams County to Berlin, Wisconsin, which was on the Fox River, in a trading post, yet in those days, a fur center. They would come through in the spring with their furs, and this woman and her son, they had a water pail full of Indian arrowheads, axe heads, all of that sort of thing, as a product of the fact that they had, these Indians had been camping at our farm. And she told me in great detail, and I have those stories in the book, she knew that this would be one of Oshkosh's sub-chiefs, Menominee John is what people called this guy. And it's those sorts of stories just bring life to a piece of land, is what it amounts to.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, Bernie. I want to give some others a chance to get in here and talk with Jerry. And Leslie in Preston, Minnesota is up next. So let's go there. Leslie, hi.
Hi, Jerry. Boy, I can't wait to get your book. You have such a great sense of humor. It's funny. But I just had a quick story about our farm. This summer I was outside and a lady drove by real slow, and she saw me out and stopped in and said that you might just want to give you the heads up, you might see a lot of looky lures next. Oh, it was like a month later. We're having a family get together, and this is where we used to, this is where my grandparents used to live, and we used to come here for family Sunday dinners. So and she said we used to have picnics down by the river, and I said, well, there's still a picnic spot down there if you want to go. And so on that day, they called me the day before and said they'd be coming, and I said, that's fine. And enrolled 18 carloads, and they had a picnic down. Well, I told them, too, that they sure are welcome to go through the house or the buildings or anything. So they came, like, at 1 o'clock, and they never even got down to the picnic spot till like, 2:30, because they were wandering through the buildings and the house. They were the nicest bunch of people, and I tell you what, it just was such a thrill to listen to all the stories from when they were kids. There were 13 kids, and then the older kids had grandkids that were there that day. And it was just amazing to listen to their stories. And since then, they've written and sent stuff that they've written, and sent me gift cards. They've invited me to California and all these different places around the country where they're from, just because we let them come and visit. And it was, I had more fun than anybody. So it was
that
great.
Is an absolute wonderful story. It certainly is. Because, again, every one of us who has any connection with land, the stories are there. They're all over the place. And Larry, just as a little bit of an aside, one of the things, I teach life story writing. I try to help people understand what a story is all about. And I want to underline again, and I try to do it in my writing, the power of a story in sharing not only the facts of a situation, but the emotions and the background and the relationships and the people that are connected to a piece of land. This whole book, this old farm, is written as a story. I have a long time ago discovered that writing quote-unquote dry history, just uncut it. Most people think about their history textbooks in high school and grade school and immediately turn off. This is a history book, folks, but it's also a story book because history is story. We should always remember that. Stories are the essence, the foundation of good history, and that's what I try to do in my writing.
And it's what you do. Ruth in Poissippi, we'll turn to you. Hi, Ruth.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Good morning, Jerry Epps. Good afternoon.
Yes, this is a neighbor. Poissippi is just down the road from Wild Rose.
Yes, it is. Well, in fact, I'm what do you say, rural Poissippi over in the big near the big town of Borth.
I know Borth.
Yes. My question is in so much of the history, yes, I was raised on a family farm up in Portage County. But some of the things as far as like Washira County, and even into Adams County, our road naming system. And who got this system going with the numbers north and south and the A's all in the north? You can find Elp Avenue all the way from Plainfield over to West Bloomfield. And,
you've asked me a question I cannot answer. I can usually deal with most questions. I find that system, pardon me, folks who named it, because you're probably listening, the screwiest thing that's ever come along. I suspect there's sense to the numbers for sure, but the road that runs by my folks' old farm, we always call it the North Road. It didn't have a label in those days. It's now Apache Road. There's no Apache was ever seen in that part of Washira County or any other part of Washira County, but yet we have Apache Lane, I suppose because it's an A, but so I don't have the answer.
Well, I tell you what, you do have the answer to how your own farm, you named your own farm in your book.
I can tell you that. We're in Rose Township, and I have a story in the book of how Rose Township came to be. The early settlers, most of them had come from Rose, New York, which is north of Syracuse. And we're in Washira County. Mm-hmm. So Rose and Roshera, put those together, and you get Roshera.
Even had a contest.
I used to write weekly columns for the Washira Argus newspaper, which is still coming out of Wautoma and as strong as ever. But for 10 years, I wrote a weekly column, and I had a contest. One woman wrote to me, she'd been reading my column, and she said, Jerry, you can't just talk about that place. You got to give it a name. So and so I ran this contest, and I thought two or three people would submit names, and we got a whole pile of them. And then I made the big mistake. We have three kids. And my wife and I decided, I guess, this is going to be democratic. Never, ever do anything like this in a democratic fashion because everybody had a vote. And my kids, I don't know, they were 6, 7, 8, something like that. They hated all these names. And so there were three of them. So Ruth and I might like a name. And we were voted down again and again. And Roshera won, I think, because the kids could say Roshera.
But it's a great name.
It is a good name. Yeah, it's a good name.
Oh, my goodness. Ruth, I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Well, you know, I like the little blurb you got from Ben Logan. Listen to the voices you will find here. A remarkable combination of farmstead nostalgia, Leopold-like descriptions of ecology, and the clear message that the land can speak to you if you are wise enough to listen.
I often sign these books when someone buys one with the simple phrase, listen to the land.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of meaning in that. It's standing out on a hill and listening to the wind on a windy day, but it's also listening to the stories of the people who once walked mm-hmm. those acres, plowed the fields, camped by the pond. So listen means a lot more than the literal idea of standing out on a hill, although that is important. I do that a lot. I stand out in a snowstorm, and believe it or not, there are few places left where it's quiet enough
to do that,
where you can hear snowflakes when they land on your sleeve. And my farm allows that.
Jerry, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jerry Apps, author of Old Farm, A History, with photographs, wonderful photographs by his son, Steve Apps. Take a look. It's a wonderful book.
Check my website, too, Larry, www.jerryapps.com.
Jerryapps.com. Right. All right. Thank you. And thank you for listening. And stay with us. Lots in store.